WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Two men are indicted on manslaughter and drag racing charges for a crash last October that killed one of the men's 4-year-old daughters. Police say 25-year-old Gilberto Posales and 24-year-old Felipe Hernandez were drag racing on Georgia Avenue when they crashed into another car driven by someone who was driving drunk. Eliana Hernandez was in the back seat of her dad's Acura when it happened. She was taken to the hospital and died. Her dad turned himself in. Posales is in jail in Illinois on unrelated charges. The other driver was issued citations for DUI. A man stabs a doctor and two nurses at a hospital emergency room in L.A. One person's critically injured. The other two have serious injuries. L.A. Deputy Police Chief Alan Hamilton says they don't think the man was targeting a specific person.
Our initially arriving officers were able to contain him to a room inside of the emergency room, and we were able to evacuate all of the people inside of the emergency room, the first floor, and the adjacent offices, while our officers held him inside of that closed location.
He was then taken into custody. If you go to Reagan National today, you'll notice some changes at the gates. Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority spokesperson Crystal Nosal.
We are changing our interior signs to add a letter A, B, C, D, or E before the gate number, so that people can navigate around the airport a little bit more intuitively.
So, for example, Gate 5 becomes Gate A5. Gate 36 becomes D36. She says no airlines or gates are moving. It's just a sign change. Prince William County is desperate for lifeguards.
The situation is so dire, the county has not been able to open its largest water park in Manassas yet this season.
Each pool and or water park requires a certain amount of lifeguards based on our certifications. So there's not, we kind of need that number to get the pools up and running.
Amir Weinrich with Prince William County Park says they're offering higher pay and training.
Sign up, take the swim test, and enrolled into a lifeguard certification class, and we get them certified and then ready to work.
Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Reds 8-5. That series continues today at 4:10. And the Rangers beat the Lightning in Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Final. Tonight, Colorado plays Edmonton in Game 3 of the Western Conference Final at 8. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the outer loop of the Beltway past Connecticut Avenue, an accident is now being reported, so use extra caution there. And also watch out for accident activity on northbound 95 right at 216. Use caution at that exit ramp. Earlier incidents in Spencerville cleared away. 198 westbound at Batson Road has been reopened. The water main break work has cleared away. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies for the start of this weekend. We're looking at beautiful conditions on this Saturday. High temperatures in the low to mid 80s with continued low humidity. Now later on tonight, lows back in the 50s in the suburbs, lower 60s around town. Head towards Sunday, temperatures back in the lower 80s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Right now, 58 degrees in Burke, 57 in Bethesda, and 64 degrees here in Washington under sunny skies. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It's hour two of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us each week. The White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The president, a passionate speech about gun control on Thursday night, but there was also a mix of politics. And I wanted to get your sense of, is there progress being made, at least among those senators on Capitol Hill? There's been a lot of political positioning, even fundraising by some on the Democratic side on the issue. But is there some true progress being made with some of the senators like Chris Murphy and John Cornyn?
No, not exactly, because to use an old saying, I've seen this movie before. Now, in fairness, there is considerable voices of faith on reaching an agreement. You mentioned John Cornyn. The senator from Texas said it would feed the narratives that we can't get things done in the public interest. he said, of the failure to come up with a bipartisan deal. And he strongly believes that there will be a bipartisan deal done in the public interest. Now, this is from a senator who is from the state where the tragic Uvalde shootings occurred, and it's someone who has a history of supporting background checks. Now, as for other senators, there may be just a few who would come out on that one particular item. Senator Toomey of Pennsylvania, who is stepping down and who sponsored similar legislation for registration with Democrat Joe Manchin of West Virginia. That was hailed as a great bipartisan move, and it never broke the filibuster to get it to a vote. It seems unlikely this is going to happen in an election year because of one thing, the clock. There are less than 5 months before Americans go to the ballot, and during that time, more often than not, members of Congress will be back home campaigning rather than voting. The idea of a bipartisan piece of legislation clearing the various hurdles, such as the Judiciary Committee and then the almost certain filibuster, are very, very slim. This reporter says a lot of rhetoric, some fundraising has already started, but no deal.
So I watched the president's speech, and I was trying to be open-minded, but when he took a slam at Republicans in that speech, it hit me the wrong way. And you're a veteran. You know these guys. You know how they think. You know how the Congress thinks, the senators think, and the president thinks, for that matter. Does that set him back when he's trying to get Republicans to work with his party, and then he takes a slam like that on a national address to the public at night?
Well, it hurts the Joe Biden that Republicans want to work with. The great compromiser, the Democratic senator who would work with conservatives, such as Republican Jesse Helms of North Carolina, and go to the middle ground. And he did so by having a very convivial relationship with his opposite numbers. Senator Helms, who probably disagreed with Joe Biden on just about every issue, said, "He's like a son to me." Well, if that's the case, this child then is turning on a lot of surrogate aunts, uncles, and cousins that he once served with by using and deploying rhetoric such as that. It would seem it's something totally incongruous when it comes to the old Joe Biden, and it's not going to help.
The president's new press secretary, Corinne Jean-Pierre, has been under the microscope for the last 10 days or so, and she's referring quite often to her notes. You got a question into her about one of the pipelines, and kind of an interesting response.
It certainly was. This was on Wednesday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Ms. Jean-Pierre having kept us waiting for 30 minutes. And at that point, she proceeded, as many of the press secretaries to Democratic presidents do, to take questions exclusively from the front three rows. There was some audible complaining in the background that you can see on the television shown on the C-SPAN website. Finally, she decided to go in the back and called on, guess who, yours truly. My question was about a controversial issue, the East Med pipeline. Now, this sounds very much like inside baseball. It's a pipeline that would originate in Israel, go through the Middle East under the sea, and then come to Cyprus and then Greece, where presumably it would go to many European countries. The United States has been critical of this in the past, even though it's not directly involved in the East Med pipeline, the reason being the pipeline and its builders are not taking into consideration climate change needs. Now, many European countries are trying sincerely to wean themselves off dependence on Russian oil and will look elsewhere. Would the administration, I asked, change its position on the East Med pipeline in light of the Russo-Ukrainian war and the new animosity toward Russia? She asked me where I got the information on the pipeline, and I said the State Department. She told me to just call them back and see what they had to say. Not a dramatic opening or something that's going to be a lead on the news at night for the new press secretary.
Well, at least she didn't say she'd circle back.
No. I think that line is going to be retired for a while because of its overuse under her predecessor.
A couple of wrenches in the gearboxes in Republican primaries, especially in Michigan. What happened there?
Well, this is something that turned politics upside down in the water wonderland. Five Republican candidates have been denied access to the August primary ballot for governor, all of them Republicans, and all of them for the reason that they had faulty and sometimes imaginary names on their petitions, which are required by the State Board of Canvassers to get on the ballot. A cursory check was done of the petitions of these five candidates, including the front runner, former Detroit Police Chief James Craig, widely known as the toughest cop in America and a frequent guest on Fox News, and multimillionaire businessman Perry Johnson, and three other lesser candidates. Craig and Johnson are going to court, saying this was a selective search. The State Board of Canvassers said they found enough fraudulent signatures to strike them off the ballot. I might add that ballots are going to be printed in the next 2 weeks, so it's unlikely they will be back on. One postscript to this. Of the remaining five candidates, one is a familiar fixture to viewers of cable news, particularly Fox News, Tudor Dixon, a businesswoman and roving commentator and a strong supporter of Donald Trump. She may well get the former president's much-sought-after endorsement and within the next 2 weeks. Keep your eye on that.
And one last quick note. In Alabama, Mo Brooks, Donald Trump, what's the latest down there?
Well, the latest is this, that Mo Brooks, congressman who had Donald Trump's endorsement and then was unendorsed by the former president, made it into the runoff against the front runner Katie Britt, former chief of staff to retiring Senator Richard Shelby. So the big question in the Yellowhammer state is, will Trump now re-endorse Brooks as he goes into a runoff in a few weeks with Britt? The race endorsed Brooks, as has the National Rifle Association and virtually all conservative organizations. A Donald Trump endorsement, sources in the state tell this reporter, would possibly put him over the top. But one must remember, Katie Britt got 46% of the vote and nearly won outright.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, thank you.
Stay cool this weekend.
717, Saturday morning update, WMAL. We're going to talk with Cheryl Atkinson next. She has some very interesting perspectives on the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial verdict. That's coming up next. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Some slow going traffic on the outer loop of the Beltway after Connecticut Avenue due to accident activity reported to be along the right side of the roadway, but that is reported to be in the clearing stages. In Laurel, there is an accident reported on northbound 95 at 216, so watch out for delays who approach the area. Also in 66, both east and westbound at the Roosevelt Bridge, the east and west exit ramps are closed due to the road race taking place until about 10:30 this morning. This is also affecting 110, which is closed in both directions between 66 and Route 1. Now for GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies for the start of this weekend. We're looking at beautiful conditions on this Saturday. High temperatures in the low to mid 80s with continued low humidity. Now, later on tonight, lows back in the 50s in the suburbs, lower 60s around town. Head towards Sunday, temperatures back in the lower 80s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
60 degrees in the nation's capital, 718, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us this weekend. Cheryl Atkison joins us. She is the host of Full Measure, which is, of course, tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
A story that we haven't spent much time here on the Saturday Morning Update is the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. But now that it has come to a close, there are so many angles on this, much deeper and broader and much more impactful to a number of different constituencies, a lot more than just a he said, she said. And you've written about this in the Epoch Times. So what stands out to you about the results of Depp versus Heard?
Well, I think a lot of people were turned off by the trial. They said this was toxic Hollywood and gossip and rumor. But really, I watched the whole trial, and I think a lot of people that wrote about it did not, at least from what I saw. They're writing off of somebody else's summaries or looking at clips. I came to believe this is really, with the verdict that came in, a much broader case than just something about Hollywood. I think this is part of a weaponization of Me Too backlash. And what I mean by that is, it was always absurd for anybody to insist that women never lie and men never tell the truth, which is sort of that women are to be believed mantra. Not that Me Too isn't a valid movement, but I think we all know that it was weaponized by bad actors who understand that just the taint of an accusation against somebody can destroy them. And we've seen that happen. Well, this jury, based on the evidence that they saw, was willing to turn that narrative on its head, even as the media continues to spin it. I mean, I saw an article in the blog Slate by a reporter who claimed the trial was rigged and was saying things like, oh, we've just been told so many times to believe men and that we have to revere what they say. And I'm thinking quite the opposite. And this was sort of a slap back at the notion that we're all to be told what to think about something and you're not allowed to have, you know, an off-narrative common sense reaction to something. So I think it's a pretty big, maybe the signaling of a switch in the swing of the pendulum on these things.
The role of the op-ed was such a major component, and you've studied op-eds, and there are things about op-eds that a lot of us don't know, including myself. So give us a little background on op-eds and then how it relates in this case.
Well, I have written that op-eds, and as described to me by people who work in what I call the smear industry, they're used by propagandists to further narratives, but under the name and guise of seemingly the ordinary people or experts or celebrities or political figures. What do I mean by that? Well, these behind-the-scenes players, corporations and nonprofits and pharmaceutical companies and interests, they are the ones who are writing these op-eds. And they will typically go to somebody that they think will be a credible front for the thing that they want to advance and convince that person, often pay that person, to sign the op-ed. And the publications who publish these know this and don't disclose it. And I think, quite frankly, that that's not a really honest way to operate. So they're pretending that these are op-eds, grassroots from people who are just thinking these things, when in fact they're usually furthering some goal for a special interest. Well, we learned in the trial that this defamatory op-ed that Amber Heard penned and the Washington Post published was actually drafted by the American Civil Liberties Union. It was the ACLU's idea, and they approached Heard, and she put her name to it and apparently went over it with her attorney, not well enough in the end, but put her name to it and timed the release to coincide with her upcoming movie, sort of a promotional thing. So, you know, when you see these things, as I always caution, there's a reason why op-eds appear and articles appear and narratives are the way they are. We should always be mindful of that.
The headline on the article, Johnny Depp's Victory, A Turning Point in the Weaponization of Me Too. And you also have that as a podcast at CherylAtkison.com, as well as the opinion piece at Epoch Times. And you've spent a lot of time following the case, and you're going to have more information on an analysis coming up on the website, right?
Yeah, I'm going to try to do the biggest reasons why I think Johnny Depp won. I think a lot of people didn't watch the trial, and the coverage I've seen, I don't think is accurate or is being written by people who watched it or by people who had a neutral eye. And they're sort of stuck to the notion that, like I say, the trial was rigged or that there wasn't legitimate evidence behind the decision. So I think it'll be a good exercise to go through for people who want to know more why, I think, exactly were, what were the strongest pieces of evidence in his favor.
Tomorrow is the season finale for Full Measure, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. And as you look back over the year, I know on your final show of the season you do a roundtable with your colleagues. As you look back over the year, what are the stories that stood out to you most? I mean, we have COVID, obviously. We have the energy crisis. We have Russia. What are the stories that strike you?
I don't know. You know, I love my job so much, and I love what I learn when doing stories on controversies like critical race theory, George Soros-funded prosecutors, soft on crime, reparations for slavery paid to blacks, should we be doing that? But I would say COVID's one of my favorites because, you know, there was so much misinformation coming out from the government and the people who were accusing others of misinformation. And we got to the bottom of a lot with some authoritative sources who proved correct. I think our record is really strong on this topic. And also that story I did that showed the dramatic overcounting of COVID deaths, courtesy of some medical examiners who blew the whistle on this. I don't know if you remember, murder-suicide counted as COVID deaths. There were living people counted as COVID deaths who had not only not died of COVID, that they had not died. I think that was important. But from a viewer perspective, one of the most popular stories was the Amish approach to COVID that I did. I had read in the Associated Press that the Amish in Pennsylvania were the first community to achieve natural immunity. And when I headed there, it was just remarkable what I learned about their approach, not shutting anything down, no hospitals, masks, isolation, no medicine, no vaccines. And their outcome, which was, you know, fantastic by most every account. So I guess that was another highlight.
Those stories on the roundtable tomorrow on the season finale of Full Measure. And at this time of the year, you head out. You do a number of stories over the summer. So we will reconnect with you in the fall. And again, thank you so much for being with us every week here on WMAL. And I know how many people just love to get your perspectives on things. And I know they will want to check out the real story behind the Johnny Depp trial. Because as you mentioned, you watched the whole trial. So many people with so many opinions did not see the whole trial. So get the full picture with Cheryl Atkinson. Check out her blog at Full Measure. I'm sorry, at CherylAtkinson.com. Cheryl, thank you, and have a wonderful summer.
Well, thank you, and let me say I appreciate you having me. I appreciate your listeners, and I know they appreciate what the good work that you do for them. So I look forward to talking to you in the fall.
Thank you. It's 7:26, Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up after the 7:30 news. KT McFarland is on the way as well, so stay with us.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update, and you may have seen a lot of the coverage of the Diamond Jubilee, of course, going on in the UK this weekend, 70th anniversary of the Queen's reign. And unfortunately, she hasn't been able to attend all of the events. She has made some appearances. Harry and Meghan were there and were booed by the citizens of Great Britain as they made an appearance yesterday. They're getting a little more of the spotlight with the Queen not attending as many of the normal events as she would. A little more of the spotlight is falling on Harry and Meghan. So we'll see how this plays out over the weekend in the Diamond Jubilee going on in London.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. 7:30, rather. Gas prices climbing again. A gallon of regular in the D.C. metro area up 7 cents overnight, with an average price of $4.72 jumping to $4.79, according to AAA. That's a little less than the national average of $4.81. Looking around the country, one of the places with the most expensive gas, Mono, California, where it's a whopping $7.01 a gallon on average. Airlines will start putting the new gate names on boarding passes starting tomorrow. They'll have a letter from A to E before the gate number. For example, gate 36 is now D36, gate 5 now A5. Those numbers will be on your boarding pass starting tomorrow, but they're already marked on gates starting today. Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority spokesperson Crystal Nosal says the changes are meant to make it easier for you to find your gate
no airlines or gates are going to be moving. This is simply a sign enhancement, and we will have airport staff on the lookout for any passengers that may need assistance.
The new gate names are being made to make it easier. If you're heading to parts of the Sunshine State today, unfortunately, you won't see much sun. Areas from the Keys on up to Orlando are getting hammered by rain as a tropical storm system moves through. Robert Garcia with the National Weather Service in Miami.
So far this morning, we have seen between, in some areas, almost up to 8 inches of rain. And we're expecting that it's possible several inches more could fall here in portions of metropolitan southeast Florida. We are seeing a considerable flash flooding event unfold.
So many roads have flooded in Miami, people are being told to stay home. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Reds. Up next, traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the outer loop of the Beltway after Connecticut Avenue, the two right lanes are still blocked with the accident and activity, so stay to your left and use caution. Traffic is slow through the area. There is a new traffic pattern on the inner loop of the Beltway north of the Dulles Toll Road. The red shoulder, red X, green arrow lane is now closed for a long-term work project. Earlier accident on 95 Northbound at 216 and now cleared away. All lanes there have been reopened. In the district, there is an event taking place today that has 7th Street closed northbound between Pennsylvania Avenue and Florida Avenue in Northwest. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, mostly sunny, high in the low to mid-80s. Right now, 67 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:36, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us this morning. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us each week. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research and the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
Well, the debate rages across the country on gun control and gun violence. The president speaking prime time this week. And as a gun owner, Tony, I wanted to ask you, what is it that progressives don't understand about the strong feelings of gun owners? In other words, if you were to sit down with a Democratic congressman, what would you say? How would you explain how gun owners feel?
I think in two areas. First is, I think, traditionally the constitutional argument, which we've seen on display in places like Ukraine, where the original intention of the Constitution and the Second Amendment was not for sport shooting. It was for actually the idea that individuals are the best defense of their own land and of their own culture. And that, you know, the collective, you know, the whole Second Amendment is written around the individual right that can be used as a collective tool to protect the nation. So that's traditional. What I would then talk about is the second piece of it is that what they're trying to do is essentially ban inanimate technology. They're trying to do something against an inanimate object. This is similar, in my judgment, of trying to essentially ban all cars because, you know, you want to take drunk drivers, hit someone with a car, then you want to go and take all cars away from sober drivers. That's the way I see what they're doing here. The idea is because there's been bad acts by criminals, terrorists, and those who are mentally incapacitated do something, and yet you want to go after and disarm everybody else who's just fine. So those are the two arguments I would fundamentally use. And within the context of this, obviously, is the right of the individual to have protection. And all these places where these things have happened, I would argue you've had lack of security. You don't have people with guns, which are going to need to be there. If you're going to stop a person with a gun, you're going to have a gun. They're arguing, or I've seen them argue, well, the police and law enforcement need to be there to stop it. Obviously, that's a bit of an oxymoron, since the left has been arguing about defunding the police and getting rid of them. So you can't win at all, you know, and I would point this very flaw in their argument out to them in a discussion. And if truth be told, I have told them this to their face, and they don't like it. So I think this is where the rationality of the argument has to be that which we all focus on, not the emotion, because all of the I see from them right now, Rick, is emotion. They feel bad, and they want to do legislation which they will make themselves feel better. It's very narcissistic in my judgment, because what they're proposing has been proposed before, had no effect, but yet they want to do it again. So,
well, let me ask you about this.
Sure.
If you take away the guns and you put very strict laws in on guns, I understand that concept. But let me tell you this story that's on the AP this morning, Associated Press, reporting out of Los Angeles. Authorities say a man walked into a Los Angeles hospital emergency ward, stabbed a doctor and two nurses, then holed up for 4 hours before a SWAT team took him into custody. All three are in stable condition. One underwent surgery. So this person didn't have a gun. This person had a knife. There are other
right.
weapons that you can legally access, such as vehicles.
Well, you've got vehicles, you've got bows and arrows. One of the technologies people have been ignoring but's been coming up really fast is the old slingshot with surgical rubber. I mean, Rick, I went to a thing recently. I saw something. You can kill someone with a ball bearing at a very great range if you learn the skill. Now, this isn't going to be the rapid-fire weapon that they're all worried about. But in many cases, Rick, you know, if you have time and distance, you can do a lot of damage. And knives in closed spaces, you know, obviously you can do a lot. And then vehicles. I mean, come on. We saw during ISIS's terror reign them killing scores of people at once with a vehicle and events. So if you want to kill somebody, it's not going to stop. My belief is the fundamental issue is violence. It's not gun violence. It's violence. It's the breakdown of society that allows these sorts of things to happen. Remember back when you and I were kids, we're kind of talking out of school here a little bit. You know, a lot of people in Texas, I know this for a fact because I went to school there for a while, would ride around with rifles in the back of their truck, and kids had rifles, and we didn't have mass shootings back then. So I think it's all about the fact that we permitted large cities and a lot of areas to implement policies which allow for this division within society that creates conditions for the violence. Violence is violence. Guns are simply a technology which is used as an extension of that violence.
One thing seems to be missing in this discussion is the role of bullying. It's a
right.
common thread. You know, whenever you see the story about the latest shooter, typically that shooter was bullied. And I've talked about this before. They're bullied. They get into a corner and they're alone. And then the mental issues start because they've been abused and bullied. And tell us the significance of that.
Yeah. So this is where if it's a child, the parents have the responsibility to know what's going on in that child's life and school officials as well. And I've had some personal experience with this regarding where we're at now. And yeah, you've got to pay attention to that. And then what happens, the child isolates. They somehow figure out a scheme, because kids are bright. They'll figure out a scheme of how to get a weapon and then plan something. Rick, these are all detectable. These things don't happen in a vacuum. And again, you know, even with an 18-year-old buying two weapons, expensive weapons, that should have raised some flags with their family and, you know, kind of gone through and figured out what's going on. So we have a breakdown in the fabric of society that we're trying to blame a technology on. So bullying is real. It's something that has been going on. And again, you have to look at the systems we've instituted to help our children grow and mature as the first place, not a piece of technology which most people use safely.
You do co-host the Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Which topic these days?
Well, believe it or not, we brought back some music legends from the 80s to talk about censoring. One of the members of Bellstar was removed, like me, from Twitter, banned permanently because, oh my goodness, we had strong opinions that leftists agreed with. So we actually had Nancy Quattro and Jenny from Bellstar on, and we talk about kind of how this phenomenon of banning people for strong opinions is something going on all across the multiple cultures within our society. So,
Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:44. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. KT McFarland is coming up next, but first we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there this morning.
On the outer loop of the Beltway after Connecticut Avenue, an accident still is blocking the two right lanes, so watch out for delays there. Also in Aspen Hill, an accident is being reported on Georgia Avenue at Hewitt Avenue, so watch out for that as well. Also in the district, be aware of a closure. 7th Street is closed between Pennsylvania Avenue and Florida Avenue Northwest due to the D.C. Department of Transportation's Open Streets event. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies for the start of this weekend. We're looking at beautiful conditions on this Saturday. High temperatures in the low to mid 80s with continued low humidity. Now later on tonight, lows back in the 50s in the suburbs, lower 60s around town. Head towards Sunday, temperatures back in the lower 80s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
61 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:45 on the Saturday Morning Update. 7:47, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland is with us each week. She was President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor. She is a board member of the American Conservative Union and the author of the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always honored to have you with us.
It's an honor and a pleasure for me too, Rick.
Well, you know, you have traveled around the country a lot, and you always are able to bring us a perspective from outside the Beltway. And I know you've talked to a lot of people around the country. Gun violence right now, a huge topic. Efforts on Capitol Hill. But take us outside the Beltway and your perspectives on the gun violence issue.
Well, you know, it's to me and to an awful lot of people I talk to all around the country, and I've just spent a month going all around the country to graduations and christenings and have seen people in a dozen different states and people from even more states and from all socioeconomic backgrounds. And it's why not use common sense? The solution is in plain sight. The Republicans, well, all they'll do is blame mental health and fractured families. The Democrats, they blame the guns. And you know something? They're both half right. So how about a comprehensive plan that, number one, makes it harder to get semi-automatics and only semi-automatics. Leave the other stuff alone. And an easy way to classify this is classify semi-automatics as machine guns, which do come with a lot of regulations on purchase. Well, the Republicans don't want to touch this because they think it's an infringement of the Second Amendment. Again, leave other legislation and regulations in place for anything other than semi-automatics and machine guns. But number two, address the mental health issue. The Democrats don't want to touch it because they think it's an infringement, I guess, on crazy people's rights, you know, which is crazy when you start thinking about it. And how about a moral leadership approach by our leaders? You know, instead of worrying about all the culture wars, how about championing intact families rather than trying to rip them apart? I mean, for example, the Democrats and Virginia famously saying, well, parents have no rights over the education of their children. Parents do have rights, and so do families. And then finally, ask the teachers, frankly, who have gone off the deep end on the woke culture, and have them worry less about which pronouns to use or which bathrooms children should use, and have them worry a little bit more about mental health and potential for mass violence. In every one of these school cases, there are flashing warning signs before a student or a recent graduate goes into a school with a semi-automatic machine gun. Now, if the permanent politicians in Washington would come together and fix this, there would be no higher goal. You know, what they do instead is they use these tragedies as an opportunity to raise campaign funds and to posture and to put their personal greed and personal political ambitions ahead of saving children. The solution is in plain sight. Common sense, which is an abundance in the American population, but in just not in abundance in Washington, D.C., they all see the solution. And until our politicians just put aside their own personal greed and ambition and start looking at this as a whole problem that we could all face together, it just keeps going.
Is there anybody that's talking common sense? I mean, what you just laid out seems pretty reasonable and seems doable, except, as you mentioned, for the politics of it. I mean, is there anybody that can chart this middle ground that you've just laid it out?
No. I mean, that's, if there is, I'm not hearing him. He's not, whoever he or she is.
I'm not either. That's why I asked the question. Yeah.
I don't know anybody. I mean, to me, but it's not just this. It's everything. It's the crisis we've got with inflation right now. Guess what? The solution is really simple. Just go and stop the war, or at least put it on pause, the war on fossil fuels, and let American natural gas and American oil be not just America having energy independence. That fixes our inflation really nicely. But how about American energy dominance? How about we replace Russia and Iran and other countries as the world's major energy source? Or how about we have a consortium between Canada, the United States, and Mexico, which was the plan in the Trump administration, that you build on the free trade agreement between the three, and you make it into an energy consortium so that our part of the world, North America, becomes the energy supplier to the world. That fixes inflation. That fixes a whole lot of problems. It gets rid of the bad guys. And frankly, it's good for the environment, because we're not going to all have everything powered by windmills in the next couple of years. But how about transitioning from dirty coal to clean natural gas, which we have in abundance? Again, there's a middle way, but politicians never want to find it.
Well, it seems the administration is on the all-or-nothing approach when it comes to fossil fuels. And the Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, kind of reiterated this week that the answer is electric vehicles. And then she says, but we're not there yet. Well, what do we do in the interim right now as Americans are just paying, what, record prices? We're up to $4.71 a gallon on Friday. Again, it's this all-or-nothing approach that the Democrats are taking. And now President Biden is talking about going to Saudi Arabia. And what's the idea, to go over and see if he can squeeze some oil out of them when we have it here?
Again, the all-or-nothing approach. Well, you know what the all-or-nothing approach is going to be in November? It's going to get rid of all of them, because none of them are willing to solve it. But President Biden going to the Saudis hand in hand, they're not inclined to do him a whole lot of favors right now, because he's letting Iran get nuclear weapons. And so do you expect the Saudis to do us any favors? I mean, maybe, I guess, if he says to the Saudis, look, you can have nuclear weapons too, maybe they'll do us a couple of favors. But I just contrast this to what happened in the Reagan administration, where President Reagan understood that if you were going to win the Cold War, you had to bankrupt Russia. And how you bankrupt Russia is with low energy prices. And he went to the Saudis, and he convinced the Saudis to pump more oil in exchange for a much closer political and foreign policy and national security relationship. But the Biden administration doesn't seem to see that.
I want to turn to the UK, the pomp and the pageantry and the wonderful celebration, the Diamond Jubilee of the Queen, and even Harry and Meghan came back over. Your perspectives, I mean, you have followed American foreign policy your entire career. You've been involved in international relations your entire career. So I think you have a unique perspective on the Queen.
Well, I also spent a good bit of time at Oxford University doing graduate degrees, and go back to the UK and to Scotland a lot. So I know the people, I think, pretty well. But the Queen is a really – we should all take a lesson from this. I don't care what your political party is. Just take a lesson from the endurance of the Queen and the Crown. And here is a woman who has served her nation for her entire life selflessly. She's never jumped in and had an opinion. She's not been allowed to. And yet she's persevered. And she was with the British people during the worst of the bombing during World War II, during – the recession, their depression, the various ups and downs of their politics over the last 70 years of her reign. And she's sort of risen above it. We don't have anybody like that. And yet, you know, here we are. All we're worried about is, you know, who's there? And did Meghan and Harry come back? What about even the Queen has even found a way to fix that rift. And I sure wish our national leaders would take a page out of this. It's not about political posturing. It's not about jumping up and down and inflaming people. It's about bringing people together, even at the expense of your own momentary popularity. Because at the end of the day, the people who bring us together, the Roosevelts, the Reagans, the Lincolns, those are the people we remember, not the people who drive us apart.
Well, President Biden had pledged that during the campaign, and I think that's part of the reason many people voted for him, is that they thought he was going to be a uniter and make an effort to unite the country. But even in his speech on gun violence, primetime audience, he took the opportunity to slam Republicans during his primetime speech. I mean, where is the unity that he pledged that we need?
I wrote a book that everyone should read because it's even more relevant today, and it's called Revolution. And in it, the final conclusion I had was that America goes through these periods of just massive sort of fighting with each other. And it's usually solution always comes from the common people of America, the grassroots, to rise up and throw out all the bums in Washington who are more concerned with keeping themselves in power than they are with serving the American people. And what I see now is we're going through one of those periods, and people like Joe Biden and the people in the White House, and even, frankly, a lot of the people, leadership of the Republican Party, take a page out of that. Because if you don't solve this, if you don't respond to the needs of the American people have other options, and the other options do not include you.
K.T. McFarland, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program with us. And you mentioned Revolution, and we would encourage folks to pick up a copy. And, of course, you'll find it wherever books are available. Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And, K.T., as always, thank you so much for such important perspectives and just common sense. I mean, it's a common sense approach, and you've spent so much time in politics and seen it from, you know, all angles. You've been at the Pentagon. You've been at the White House. You've run for office. So I think you just bring a wonderfully unique perspective to the show. And for that, I express my appreciation, and I know that our listeners do. So, K.T., thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Rick.
That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news here on WMAL. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.